Hello, and welcome to the Midwest Genealogy Center's Tell Me a Story program, an initiative to record America's family history in sound. Oral histories are one of the most personal and rewarding ways to preserve family stories. The Tell Me a Story sessions are 45-minute interviews between two people with the assistance of a trained facilitator. Participants will receive a compact disc with the full interview. A copy will be archived at the Midwest Genealogy Center and, with permission, later made available to the public. And now, another story.
It's January 27th, 2016. I'm George York. I'm going to be interviewed by my niece, Lisa Walden.
And I am Lisa. So, George, what I'd like to ask you about today, I think, has historical significance. And to start with your earliest memory of when you had TB, you had told me earlier that your brother also had it. Can you tell me how you think you guys contracted that?
Well, I believe we contacted whenever we went up to see Delmer at Marshall's home up there for boys. There's time we have him home. Could have been a number of places being up there and my body being growing so fast and it breaks my immune system down so I'd get the bug.
Yeah. When did you find out that Delmer, your brother, had TB?
I'd say probably 1955.
Was that before you found out that you had it also?
That's before, after.
After. So you found out.
Before I found out I had it, yeah.
Okay. And how long was he, we're going to just talk about Delmer for a second. How long was he sick with it before he actually died?
2 years.
He had TB for 2 years. Did they put him in some kind of special TB ward?
No, they had him institutionalized in a home for boys, and they all lived in one. A certain group lived in one. Another group lived in another home and another area. So they basically kept these here, and those that were there. These people here wouldn't get affected with what these guys had, what Delmer had.
Okay. Did they separate them? This, first of all, maybe talk about what the home for boys was, why he was in a home for boys.
His mom was an alcoholic. He became a prenatal alcohol syndrome child, retarded. And he had the sixth sense. He could go around through any animal. He'd been around vicious dogs and just played with them, and they'd just be like puppies to him. He'd go out there, pull a mane of a horse over to the fence line, get up on the horse, let the horse graze around for a couple hours. The horse goes down by the barn. Had a persimmon tree there, a low limb, and just walk slowly and let him slide off the back. Mm-hmm. Once they see he's okay, then they just trot back out into the field.
Sounds like he had a real gift.
He did.
Yeah. So how was it that he got moved to the boys' home? You said it's called Marshall's?
Marshall, Missouri.
Marshall, Missouri, the boys' home there?
Well, back in the 40s and 50s, you have a retarded child out there with you. Everybody stares at him. He felt very uncomfortable with his retardation because the way people stared at him. We walked down there, everybody turned their head like this and stared at him. And it was pure misery for him. And once Sis and I both got into school, he tried to find us, run away from home and tried to find us. So Dad and Mom got together and tried to find out what would be the best way. He didn't like to come in town with us. But Dad found out about the boys' home up there for people who have retardation and stuff like that. And that's what reason we got him in there.
Yeah.
We go up there every couple of weeks. We take him out to the park, plug in a waffle iron, bring up some waffle stuff, make him waffles. That was his favorite.
Yeah, that's pretty nice. So when he contracted TB, was he put into an area where there were other TB patients, or was he just there and all of the people that he lived with got TB and nobody knew until they were all infected?
Well, he was put in one home. That home had some TB patients in there. He contacted TB from those guys. Mm-hmm. Now, when they put people in different homes, they generally keep them in there. So, well, one home has infection, the other ones won't get the infection. So that's how they, once they find out they had TB, then they could, might as well figure out everybody in that home had been affected that way. So they just left them in the home.
And how old was he when he died?
He was 19. Died in 1956.
And what did he die from?
Tuberculosis, choked to death.
And did many of the boys in that home die from tuberculosis, do you know?
Quite a few of them did.
But you also contracted TB.
Right.
Did anybody else in your family, did your sister or your parents?
My sister tested positive. But really, it never really showed any sign of TB. She took some penicillin for 30 days, and that was it. But she always will carry. All TB tests will show that she's positive. Hmm. Like all the TB tests on me will show I'm positive.
So that's like a lifelong carrier if you contract it once.
Right,
huh?
And that's why I can't take steroids. Steroids will unlock the TB in my system because they break down the immune system. And what they found out, with no immune system to control it, it'll come back and generally kill the people.
Wow. So when you found out, had Delmer died already when you found out that you had TB?
Yep.
What did you think? Did that scare you? How did you feel about that?
I didn't. When I discovered I had TB, I was playing summer league baseball. I'd come home. I'd be so exhausted I couldn't hardly do nothing. I'd be sleeping in more. My energetic, my part of my body running around all the time was gone. I just moped around like a bum. And well, they went down, had me checked, gave me an x-ray, and found out I had a hole in my lung size of silver dollar. So Dr. Maxson says, well, we're going to send you down in Mount Vernon. I've never been away from my home that long a time. I was away from home for 8 months the first time. Came back, started back school and all that. Went back, got checked out. They said it hadn't gone away that much. I was still taking a PAS and INHs.
Which, I don't know what that is.
Are the pills they gave to TB patients. You take about 24 PASs a day. And probably about 6 to 8 INH pills a day. So you probably take around 30 pills, a little over 30 pills a day. I was still taking the pills. I wasn't getting healed up, so they sent me down for a year.
Wow. So let's talk about the first 8 months. You said that was, you'd never been away from home that long.
Right.
What did you feel when you got there? Was that like abandonment, like you'd done something wrong? Or did you understand how old were you, first of all?
Well, let's see, I think I was 14.
You're 14 when you had, what grade was that? You said earlier you had.
That was junior high.
Junior high.
Just so, getting ready to go into high school.
Yeah.
So, and it was just a deal that I'd be missing all the kids. I couldn't go out and watch them play basketball. I couldn't go watch them do anything, and I was down around strangers. And it was just a thing that you just felt so. And I was put in with a bunch of old men. Mm. You meet some neat people there. One guy there, he could listen to the radio, read a book, and write a letter all at the same time. Now, that's a neat person. There's people there that cuss you out, do everything, but you get a violin and put it in their hands, and the music comes out as pure and clean and beautiful.
So they had instruments that could be played there.
Yeah.
What else?
Either that or their family members would bring in instruments when they come in.
Hmm.
Yeah, I don't think they leave them there, but.
Hmm. What would you do for? I mean, was there school there? Did you continue your studies, or what did you do during the day?
Walked around circles.
Walked around circles.
Learn how to play pitch.
That's a card game?
Mm-hmm. And that's about it.
So they didn't have any kind of recreational therapy or education for a 14-year-old boy?
Not until I went down the last part of my year. Then they talked about going into school.
So after you came home, after the 8 months, and then you went back for the year,
mm-hmm.
That's when they started talking about you going to school?
The last part of the year I was there.
The last part. So did they have a teacher brought in for you?
Well, they had a person come in, and he'd... We go over some lessons and stuff like that. And he went on leave, or he took off for a while, and I just never went back. Because he wasn't there, and other things came up. I was in pediatrician area for a while.
What was that, with little children?
Yeah. Saw this kid, a little baby, in a body cast. TB of the spine.
Hmm.
So TB is not just of the lung. It can be kidney. It could be spine. Other parts of the body. It's a similar like cancer in a way.
Hmm. I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
So you were put, and you were older now. This was your second time, mm-hmm. right? So when you first went there, you were a kid with adults. The second time you were there, you were high school age, and you were put with the small children.
Right.
Were there other older boys there or older girls, or were you the only?
I was the oldest one except for the nurses.
Except for the nurses.
Then I went out, moved to one of the outer buildings. And when I went out there, then that meant I could get out. I could walk around the place. I could look over the fence down there at the creek and just dream. What it'd be like to go down and go fishing.
That was your escape.
Mm-hmm.
Your mental escape. When you were there the first time, what was the sleeping arrangement like? And
well, you had hallways of birthing.
Of birthing?
Mm-hmm.
Where women came in to give birth?
No. Sleeping areas.
Oh.
They were in hallways.
Oh. All the beds were in hallways?
One on one side of the main hall, one on the other side of the main hall.
So the beds were just lined up in the hallway?
Had a hallway in the center.
Oh,
and
okay.
Then you had sleeping areas on each side.
Oh, okay. Did you have private room sleeping areas, like two to a room, or it was just one massive room with mm-hmm. a bunch of beds? So the first time you were just one bed among all the older men.
Right.
And were they respectful, or did anybody try and invade your space?
No, they were respectful. There were some of those older guys were a good friend, and I think they would have stood up for me.
Good.
And there were some guys there, lived there, but they thought about a home. They didn't think about sex or anything like that. They just kept thinking about home.
A lot of homesick people, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Did you feel homesick?
Yeah. Of course you do. 14-year-old kid thrown into a TB sanitarium over 100 miles away from home. You know, your dad and mom can't get that and come down there after work every day.
How often did they visit?
Oh, I think two. Every third week they'd be down there.
And would they have to wear any kind of protective gear so they wouldn't catch TB or what?
No, they never even thought about it. They took me out. I went out and ate at a restaurant with them and all that. Back then, they didn't think about all the protection gear they have now for it.
Hmm.
Now, if I had TB, I'd go out, I'd carry a mask with me.
Yeah. Were they extra scared having lost, you know, your brother and then having you have TB and be institutionalized with the TB?
I don't think they were lost. I was ministered home four or five times. Every time I'd come up home, I was ministered to.
What does it mean to be administered to?
That means when the elders lay their hands on your head and anoint your head with oil, one guy pray for a person that's praying, and another guy, and also praying for the anointment of the oil.
Okay, so.
And the other guy would pray to the Lord for you in a unique way.
So your family was very faithful, very religious.
Right.
And thought you could be healed with
right.
prayer. Okay. So when you, the second time you were in for that year
right.
long, and you were with the small children and mm-hmm. babies, what was that sleeping arrangement like?
Two to a room.
So you had a little kid as your roommate?
A younger guy.
Oh, a younger guy. And did you develop a friendship with this younger guy? How old was he?
Well, he's a couple years old, younger than I was, and more bratty.
More bratty.
They kept the rooms cold. You take the sheets in the middle of the night and flip them up and down, you see sparks.
Wow.
We always thought that was fun.
That was your entertainment. They kept it cold on purpose or just
yeah.
because it was an institution?
Germs can't travel and can't spread when it's cold weather. It has to have hot weather.
Wow. What was your food situation like?
It's an institutionalized food.
Like, did you have to go to a kitchen or cafeteria, or did they bring it to your room?
Yeah, in the PEDS area, they brought your food to you. You had a tray and brought it in and set it on your tray. Now, after I got moved out into that one of the outer houses, then we had a cafeteria. We went down and ate it.
And you're a big guy. I can imagine you were a big kid, too. Big meaning tall,
right.
large person. So I imagine you ate a lot. Did you get enough to eat?
I probably did. The whole thing is I grew 6 inches in 1 year, and that's the time I got TB.
Oh, wow.
Because my growing system and my immune system and all that was in a weak state. But anyway, through that all, I came out. Learned how to play pitch, especially over at the pavilion.
That was the second time?
Yeah.
With the outer buildings?
Mm-hmm. We played pitch over there, and I'd be watching them in person. One of the other guys had to go over and have an operation, take a rib out, and pull that and cut out that part of the lung. Then he'd be stooped over one way for the rest of his life. Unless he learned just to stand up straight for some time. And he, what I realized, I've had people worse than I was go in for surgery. People wasn't as bad as I was going in for surgery. And I floated through it. When I came out, they said, when I went into the Navy after I got out of school, they said they could hardly see a scar on my lung of that for TB.
And what do you attribute that to?
The Lord.
Those prayers of your parents and the elders of your church.
Yeah, I contribute everything that's happened to me and I came through. It's because of prayers of my family. My strong belief in Jesus Christ and all that.
Well, you have been through a lot, too. And this is probably a good place to transition to another piece of history that is a traumatic piece of history. And that is when you were in Vietnam and you got, and I don't even know the words for this, you were sprayed with Agent Orange, or how did you, what was the process that?
Agent Orange was sprayed on the foliage. Rain, monsoon rains come in and wash it into the rivers. River would wash it down into the ocean. I'd be going up to Dong Ha, 7 miles upstream. I'd go in there and have to walk through the water, get into the other boat, take my cable, my starter, change it out, pneumatic starter, tie it up, hook up the other one, hook it to everything, hook the starter deals up, hook everything to the batteries, and be sure all the cables are out of the way.
And this would be you in the water doing your work.
No, I'd have to walk through the water to get in the other boat to do the work.
Okay.
And in doing so, and also down on the beachheads, because after Vietnam War was over, science went in there. And they found out Agent Orange has gone 16 miles out into the ocean before the ocean could stop it.
The ocean could stop it, or it would just kind of dissipate in the ocean and go away?
It would dissipate.
But did the government know that its own soldiers were going to be affected by this?
You had some of the chemistry people who worked on it, so this is illegal to human people. All right, our government didn't care what it did to Charlie.
Charlie meaning the people you were fighting against.
Right. North Vietnam, Chinese people, all that.
And the villagers, anybody, any of the people there.
But friends of mine that their sons were in it, coming out, got sprayed. They'd wave to the plane, and they'd be off the side, and they'd be walking down there, be have the uniform and everything on, and they'd plane take a circle and just spray them.
So they got it on their heads, on their uniforms, everything.
And once they get spray a territory, then we go in there. It might have had a rain. But there's still enough of that Agent Orange in that system to be harmful to people.
Did it bother you when, I mean, obviously it bothered you later. You're on disability because of it. Mm-hmm. But did it bother you when you were in it at the time? Did it bother your breathing, or did you numb out, or, I mean, hands numb, or did you have any kind of symptoms from
really,
it?
Really, it didn't really, well, one thing it did, it just make my feet feel like I'm walking in mud.
And that started in Vietnam, that you kind of lost the feeling?
Last part of being in the Navy.
Yeah, which you were there how many years?
I was in and out of there 5 times in 4 years.
You were in it, meaning going to Vietnam?
Mm-hmm.
5 times.
Taking the supplies up to Da Nang. The first trip, I was aboard ship just working on the deck winches, get them back up and run. Next couple of times, I was out on the boats because I made enough rank.
On the boats, meaning?
Landing crafts.
So you
LCM Mod 6s, they're metal boats that they can haul a six pack in, or a big truck in with a haul tanks, medium sized tanks. You can haul loads of supplies in.
So you delivered supplies to the beach, or
right?
Okay. Did you also go with the supplies, or did you go back to the boat or the ship?
Well, I was on the salvage boat, so we stayed at the beachhead or upstream, and the boats come up and down. And every now and then, we'll take a trip down. Be sure none of the guys got broached up on the sandbar.
Okay.
Because if they do, they're just a pickoff for Charlie.
Okay. And what about the last time you went there?
Last time, let's see. Matter of fact, I took out, they went into Sasebo, and I flew out of Sasebo to come back home.
I don't know what that is.
They flew me back home before the ship got back because of my outdate.
Oh, so you were ready, or your 4 years were up?
Mm-hmm.
And you got to come home because of that?
Yeah. I should have extended and done some other stuff there. Got my record straightened out so I could get out a good conduct reward, but I can still get that straightened out now.
So, but your feet were already bad by then.
Yeah.
And any other health problems? Your lungs?
Nope. Just numbness in my feet. Now I got numbness in my fingers. It's getting harder to button my shirts. But the thing of it is, I still shuffle cards.
You can still play pitch. But didn't you tell me earlier that you also developed diabetes because of the Agent Orange?
Well, that's what they say came on me from Agent Orange's diabetes. And I told them up there at the VA that I had numbness of feet when I came out of Vietnam last tour of duty. And they wanted me to wait until I went up to got diabetes. Well, I'm type 2 diabetes, insulin resistant. So then they said diabetes brought on your Agent Orange, brought on your numbness in your feet, wasn't Agent Orange. And I just shook my head. I said, I told you when I got out, I had numbness in my feet. And you don't believe me. They denied my comfort that I was in Vietnam and that I was upstream because I was counted as a blue water sailor, not a brown water sailor. But after they realized we went 7 miles upstream to the supply base and 4 miles upstream to another one, and then to Nang Harbor for another one, that I'd been upstream in several of them. So then I concluded that I had Agent Orange.
How many years did it take you before the government took responsibility, or the military took responsibility?
I'd say it probably took... they didn't take responsibility until 04. No, no, 06. 05, 06.
2005, 2006?
Yeah.
And you got out in, what, 72? Or around there?
67.
You got out in 67?
Went in 63, November 22nd, 1963, the day that Kennedy got killed.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. But they didn't admit to you being affected by Agent Orange until 2005 or 2006.
Yeah, and I put a request in 2004.
That's amazing.
And so I've had a request in until they finally gave it to me. And that was probably about 2005, 2006, they gave it to me. So they paid me back to 2006 on the pay scales it was until it got larger and larger and larger. So I got a pretty good chunk of money back, a couple of $1,000.
Oh, yeah.
And, but, you know, that's the way our government works.
Apparently.
Went down to Seminole Reunion, meet some of my old guys.
Seminole is what?
The ship I was on, attack cargo, okay. USS Seminole, AK-104.
So this was what, the 50th, no, 40th year? What year reunion was it? Or was it just a reunion?
It was a reunion after my wife died. It was probably 05 or something like that. Found out everybody's down there because they had prostate cancer, even though they haven't had it out. They had a diode, piece of diode or something of that would kill the cancer in there. Besides it, and killed it or whatever. It was all 100% disability.
Everyone from that ship was on 100% disability.
That was there. They had prostate trouble.
And
had other problems. We had a couple of guys that died from it, from a horrible cancer death. From the guy that said had got it in such a way, in disability in a way, they killed themselves. See, the war. When I come back to stateside, I'd be called a baby killer, a rapist, and also a slaughter. Or a massacre. College kids coming in to San Diego, coming home from the universities. That's a lot of things that was hollered at us that were in uniform. When we weren't in uniform, and they wouldn't holler at us. But we wore our uniforms out. A lot of times we had to come back to if we got a room up there in San Diego, had to wear our uniforms in, then we'd go out in civilian clothes and it'd be no problem.
Did you do that just so that people wouldn't yell at you?
Yeah, but, you know, it wears on you. You see, vans for the Army we bring in, or the Marines they bring in, but as soon as the Marines are out, vans stop and they march off. There's enough for Navy. And a lot of Vietnam vets, Army, Marines, Coast Guards, all felt the same way. A little bit of fanfare for the family, but not very much acceptance from our government. No welcome home from our government. Our dead, they'd ship home. They honor the family. The 21-gun salute and all that. But a lot of problems from that war. You meet friends. You become buddies to people. They leave your boat, go out and travel somewhere. And the group comes back. And your buddy's gone. He's been killed. That's what tears at the person's heart. That's what tears at people that come back here that lost their friends over there. They don't care about life anymore. They just want to be over there with their friends. And finally the government started realizing that. Where they really started looking at when you have 100 people killing themselves. Now, they didn't care if 1,000 people killed themselves in Vietnam, coming back from Vietnam. They didn't care because from Vietnam, they couldn't build mental institutions for them. So Kansas City, New York, San Francisco, L.A., all filled up with homeless GIs. 95% of all homeless people back there during the 70s and 80s were homeless GIs, mainly from the war. Women, too, because we had nurses over there.
Did you know that at the time? That your friends from the Seminole ship were committing suicide?
No.
You just found this out at the reunion?
I found some of that out, and I researched some of it, and what the suicide rate was for Vietnam vets, and it was amazingly high. We've had people who have maimed and kill people because of flashbacks. I thought I had all out of my system, got to working at the base. They were doing the main gate going into the weapon storage area.
Just a second, let me back up. So you were out of the military, mm-hmm. working as an electrician at
Whiteman Air Force Base.
Okay.
And they took away my line badge to go in there. So I had to have an escort. Called up to say they have an escort there. And so I could go in there, and all of a sudden the guy said, no escort there. So they jacked me up, put my hands up, told me to turn around, tell my guy to get out of the truck. He said, when I saw your eyes, George, I never saw a person in your that had eyes like you, that didn't look like you. So you turned around and started calling Charlie.
Wow.
And he said, Charlie, sonny, no way you're going to get me in that place. You have to kill me to drag me across that line and through that gate.
So how did you get out of, what do they call that, flashback? Disconnect. How did they get you out of that?
How did they get me out of it? I guess the guy went back there and told him I was a Vietnam vet, and I heard the guy say, you want me to handcuff him? He said, please don't. If you don't want your people hurt, don't go to him. He's having a flashback. They ordered all the guns to be lowered down. I came up the gate, said, "Mr. York, why don't you go on back to the deal? Put your hands down and walk on back." As I walked on back, my mentality came back to me.
What was your physical response from that kind of flashback? I mean, did you suffer physically? Were you exhausted from it, or did you feel normal again, or what?
Angry.
So you had anger.
Angry that I was put in that position. See, in a normal place, but because of the barbed wire fence around it.
Around the base?
No, around the weapon storage area, that area. As long as the barbed wire was there, mentally you think of the prisoner of war camp. And that's the only thing I could flash back at. It brought me to.
Were you ever taken as a prisoner of war?
Mm-mm.
What did you see in Vietnam?
I've seen prisoner of war camps, pictures of them in Vietnam. I've seen pictures of them in other wars. And it's just that you're pushed to a certain limit, all of a sudden things pop into your mind. Oh, I've been shelled, I've been shot at. Snipered at and everything, mowed shelled at. And the good Lord brought me through it all. But it's something that's very dear to me. It wasn't until I was out, my wife died, until I think probably about 08, 09. Up here in Independence, they had a reunion of all veterans. And that's when they had a big welcome home party for us.
That was your first welcome home?
First welcome home. That for my family. But from the government, that was our first welcome home. Lady Chaplain got up there and prayed. When she got done praying, now, that 750 guys that I could turn around and look at, nobody had a dry eye. They all had, some were crying, some were just standing there with tears running out of their eyes. It was all moved by that one lady's prayer. And then they bigwigs got up there, the generals, the admirals and all that got up there and said, one of them says, "You know, you guys taught us one thing. Don't bring your boys home without welcoming them home." He says, "If we didn't learn anything else from you guys, that's the main thing we learned." He said, "Now we honor all prisoners to come home. Now we welcome all everybody home. Army, Navy, Air Force. We don't let anybody come home without feeling welcome." He said it was a bad years for all of us. It was a growing experience for all of us. But Vietnam, like I know, Vietnam was nothing but hell. War is nothing but hell. And that's why I look at all wars now.
So it took them 50 years to finally
welcome us home.
Welcome you home.
Yep.
Was that, did you find that healing at all? I mean, obviously the prayer was healing. It touched everybody. But did that do anything for you, for the pain that?
It helped. It was too late for my buddies, my comrades. I just pray that the Lord has accepted them. Our government made them feel like they were a worthless piece of poop. A lot of the family members didn't care about them because they sent their brothers up to Canada to stay up there. They didn't want him to go to war, but he went to war.
So even some of the families didn't welcome their children back home after serving?
No.
What about your family?
I was welcomed home by my family.
Were your parents proud of you, or did they just kind of, you know, welcome you and not talk about it, or how was their attitude?
Well, a lot of us we talked about it some. I realized that it would start to, if I talked about it, it wasn't so much of a pain. So people in different ears would talk to me about it, and I let things come out and start talking. And as I did, the pain of what I felt started getting less and less and less inside of me.
Did your parents want to hear your stories? Or was it more your friends?
My friends, my dad would. My mom was not so much want to hear about the war. Church friends, we talked about it. One guy was down there getting ready for a potluck, and the guy said, "Don't talk to me about Vietnam." He says, "I've got it locked away in the back of my head," and he says, "I ain't going to talk about it. I don't want to bring it back out." And I realize you don't talk about it, it's going to be like a cancer in you.
Have you been willing throughout your life since then to share with, like, your own daughter, with anybody who's asking?
It helps inform them, but also helps me to relieve the pain that's within me.
Is there anything else that people have done for the Vietnam vets since that welcome home ceremony to honor the service that you guys gave?
Not really. You and the vets coming home today are coming home and having a hard time getting into the VA system because it's so clogged up.
You had that one, I don't know if he's known, he or she is known, that one benefactor that flew you guys out to Washington, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain that gift?
Well, they've been sending us vets from these veterans' home out to Washington to see all the monuments out there.
And that was free, a free trip for you?
Free for all of us. And they're getting around, they're trying to get all the vets out to all the homes that can travel. You got to realize there are some vets that can't travel.
Was that a private donation to fly you guys out there and put you up? Or was that some kind of institution?
We just a one-day trip.
Was that an institution, though, that gave you the funds, or was that a private donation, do you know?
Well, it was a private donation from a number of people. You had the VFW, you have American Legion, you have the Veterans of Foreign War, you have so many activists now for the vets to help them get out there, help them come back. They sent a couple of nurses out there to be with us. A couple of nurses come back. So they take wheel patients. They have people go out there extra to push guys in wheelchairs. We had one guy had to have an electric chair. And the first bus, he couldn't have electric chair in. we all struggled to get him back up into the bus.
Oh, wow. This was at the Vietnam Vet Memorial?
Going to.
Yeah, going to it.
And we struggled to get him back down to the chair. But they had a manual chair for him. But all of this came out from the goodness of the hearts of many people.
Sounds like, tell me if I'm wrong here, but it sounds like vets are taking care of vets. It's not government programs, but it's like the VFW you're saying. It's people who have been to war that are healthy, have money, and they're the ones donating.
Right.
To take care of you guys.
You have people at Walmart. You have people at other industries donating money to us to get it done. I know Walmart had been supposed to have been one of the donations. One of the tire companies supposed to have been one of the donators. Then you had a lot of private donations come in there, then had discount from the airline. So you have you cannot say this person or this person or that person donate. It was a combination of all of them.
They're working together on behalf of the disabled vets. Right. And to close, I'm just curious as to how long is the waiting list to be able to get into, for a disabled vet to be able to get into a veteran's home? How long did you have to wait?
It has priority. Me, I waited a little over a year.
So when you signed up, it was a year later that you were able to move in. What about some other people?
Some people come in from nursing homes straight into it when they get cleared of height.
Okay, and are there other people that wait longer than a year?
Yeah, people that drive and all that. People that can be still handled at home.
Handled at home meaning being able to live with family or that their injuries or their medication can still be handled by loved ones at home. Well, is there anything else you would like to share from either your tuberculosis experience or your Vietnam experience?
Not really. TB experience was a general education on a lot of things. Open your mind, open a young kid's mind to many things. Now, life has been an open book for me for many ways. To give up hate and start loving my brothers and sisters. I fought a lot until the welcome back. And slowly my anger quieted down. Slowly my anger has lessened. But I held on in anger for a long time after a welcome down. But only through the grace of God that I was able to let it go.
Sounds like it's that something that you have worked on.
I had to.
Sounds like your parents planted something in you, too, that encouraged you to let it go, too.
Yep. No, I'll tell you. I was reinsured through the Spirit that this trouble would pass away from me and that I was to worry or carry the shame of it. But man, it's hard. It's hard to know that you cared about people that went in and killed the families, children's, stuff like that. You come back with a dislike of yourself and all that. For many years, I could tell you God loves you more than you could ever know. I'd walk away, I sure wish he'd love me too. But now I know he loves me, and I know he loves you. And everybody in here, he loves. He honored wildest dreams.
That sounds like a good place to end this interview. Mm-hmm. I want to thank you, George York, for being willing to tell your story here.
My pleasure.